come here, listen, I wrote you a song.
Oh, that sounds great.
Here, listen to it again.
Oh, I like it.
It's kind of catchy, don't you think?
Yeah, it reminds me of someone being electrocuted.
Yeah, I've made it up for Mr. Morrison.
Oh, I'm sure he'll enjoy that.
Well, better than throwing a cup of water in his face or a cell phone in his eye.
Been there, done that.
Old news.
Good times, remember those, Bill?
Yeah.
Oh yeah,
remember those days.
Well, so the monkeys back. Have been locked away in the bedroom, and Grandpa Angus is happy with his bottle of Kraken rum.
So I can take my helmet off?
Yeah.
Okay, well, yeah, if you want the aliens to be able to communicate with you.
Good point.
They leave us this little buzzer, though.
Yeah, I know, this little buzzer, because we are going to get to this Little Mermaid story sometime.
It is our
today.
Lightning Round podcast.
It
with
is
Bill
the Lightning
Morrison,
Round podcast.
Where we are
Bill
firing
Morrison.
Questions at him at lightning speed, and he is answering them at lightning speed.
Yes. Okay, so here we go, Bill. As succinct as possible.
Okay.
Tell the kids at home about the kids' show in which you played just ahead.
Oh.
Okay, that is a show called The Chop Shop. It airs only on one cable system in the
Tri-County area.
Southwest yeah. Michigan area in Wyandotte, Michigan. It's Wyandotte Basic Cable. It's a show developed by my best friend growing up by the name of Steve Cowell. And he and I used to love horror movie shows on TV. And he ended up working for this cable company, and he became the guy that would part of basic cable is there's public access and people can come in and use the studio, use
right.
the facilities.
Mm-hmm.
His job was to show people how to do a show.
Mm-hmm.
And he started to realize, why don't I do my own show? I've always wanted to do, he's always had the idea to do this horror movie. So he developed this character called Uncle Dead Guy.
He gets, Uncle Dead Guy.
He gets public domain horror movies. He chops them down to, I think, an hour, maybe a half hour.
Half hour would be better.
Half hour.
He shows like just the best parts.
Yeah.
But he keeps enough. Yeah, he keeps enough in there to keep the story thread going.
Right.
And then he tells interesting facts about the actors and about the film in between. And anyway, he invited me. I was coming home to Detroit. And he said, when you come to town, why don't you come on the show? And I said, oh, I would love to, but I don't know. I don't want to just come on as myself. Can I be a character? And he said, yeah, come up with a character. So I decided I would be a head on a plate. And so I asked him if they could rig up a table so that I could just have my head through a hole in the table and have a tray around me. With all kinds of red, gory, jello, and cranberry sauce and stuff. And then do scary makeup to make me look dead. And I became Cousin Headley.
Cousin Headley, yeah. And Uncle Dead Guy.
So whenever I go back to Michigan now, we do an episode of the show. And I've done two so far.
Are they available on YouTube?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Oh,
we have to try to find it.
The Bill Morrison, a drink and now an entree.
The Bill Morrison drink, for those of you that weren't listening last week, how dare you? But the Bill Morrison is diet soda or pop if you're from Michigan, or Coke if you're from Texas.
Yeah.
And
cola.
Diet
cola.
Diet cola.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Diet, okay.
Like you couldn't use Diet 7-Up, for
correct.
Example.
Or right. else that would be a Tiger yeah. Woods if you had cheap perfume.
Yeah.
So the... And an Arnar Parnar. So
oh, yeah.
Entirely. So, okay. All right. So we've got Uncle Dead Guy and Cousin Headley. The next question I had for you is, tell us about hosting the Eisners. Go. How long have you been hosting it? Because we did actually a Magic Eisners one
yes.
year. You had me on and we did something really fun with SpongeBob SquarePants where you drew a picture of, you said you were going to come out and everyone knew you worked with The Simpsons. And you said, I'm going to draw one of the characters that you're all very familiar with, a bulbous-eyed yellow character, and you drew SpongeBob.
Right.
And the eyes on the drawing began to move, and then the mouth began to move, and it was talking in SpongeBob's voice, and then out walked Tom Kenny.
Right. That was how we introduced Tom Kenny. Yeah.
That was pretty cool.
So you've been hosting the Eisners for how many years?
I think so, they know.
What are the Eisners? Tell them at
home. The Eisners are the comic industry's equivalent of the Oscar.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's the...
You're the comic equivalent to Billy Crystal.
I guess so.
Yeah.
Oh.
Or... no, not Uncle a fan.
So you've been hosting that for 6 years, you said?
I think 6 years. Yeah. Maybe this might be 7 coming up.
How did that happen?
I had presented a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
I was asked to be a presenter, and Jackie Estrada, who is the administrator of the Eisner Awards and who runs, puts the whole show together.
Also a very nice lady.
Mm-hmm.
And married to Batten Lash, cartoonist Batten Lash.
Terrific cartoonist, yes.
With whom you work.
Right. He writes Radioactive Man for Bongo, and he does his own Supernatural Law comic book. She asked me if I would consider hosting because at that point they didn't really have a host. She would come out and kind of say the technical stuff that she had to say, the stuff, just the bare bones information people needed to know about how the Eisners were voted on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And then the individual presenters would come up and they didn't really have a host to sort of like keep things moving and keep it all together. And she kind of felt like she needed to take something off of her plate and not have to worry about it. So she asked me if I would be the host. And the first thing I asked her was, and even though I don't want this to sound like I'm insulting the way the show used to be, but it had the reputation of being very long and on the dry side.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked her if it would be possible to add some things that would make it more, not only move faster, but more interesting. And she said, yeah, absolutely. So we instituted music. So when people's names were called, there was like a theme that played.
Right.
We selected special themes for all the different presenters.
Mm-hmm.
We had my lovely wife, Care. On stage, all glammed up, and that was her idea. One of her criticisms, Kara's criticisms, was she said, everybody, when they get their award, they never know which side of the stage to go off on, and they have to go off on a specific side to get their picture taken,
because
there's a photographer down on stage right. Or is it?
Doesn't matter.
Yeah. And so she said, I could be up there to like guide people off, like they have the ladies on the Oscars who do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, that's great. So
she looks amazing in those dresses.
She looks fantastic.
She is stunning.
And takes attention off of me, which is great.
You share attention because you're both very appealing.
Well, I get very
nervous.
You are
so engaging and charming.
So
you would never know it.
I feel much more, confident with her up there because I feel like people are looking at her. They're not looking at
me. Looking at both of you.
Wow.
But you are very charming and engaging, and you can hold your own.
Well, thank you.
You don't pull focus. You guys share. So
yes.
There you go.
So I did the first year, and I think it was the second year, I had been working with some comedians who I had invited to work on a Treehouse of Horror issue.
Mm-hmm.
So Tom Lennon from Reno 911, and Ben Grant, who's his writing partner, right?
Yeah, like Night of the Museum and stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Brian Posehn, stand-up comedian.
Right.
Of course, yeah.
And I'd also worked with Patton Oswalt, although that first, or that second year, he wasn't available, so I didn't get him to present until the third year. But anyway, we started inviting presenters who had a comic connection. They were either like uber comic fans, or they had written a comic book, or written many comic books, but were also comedians and entertainers.
Mm-hmm.
So we started really upping the entertainment aspect of the show. So I don't remember which year it was, but Jackie said this year the theme is going to be magic. She started like having themes for the show, which most people weren't aware of during the show. But if you were one of the people getting an award or up for an award, there were themes around the tables. Like you had tables to sit at.
Right.
Like one year it was Las Vegas, so they had like poker chips and mm-hmm. things decorating mm-hmm. the tables. But anyway, the year that it was Magic, I said, could, you know, Misty Lee, she's a magician. Could we possibly get her to come and present? I think you and Paul had already presented.
I think that was 3 years ago.
We did the year before. We had presented the year before, and then you brought us back to right. present. And so we had a good time.
Yeah. So I said, can we get Misty to come and do some magic? And Jackie said, yeah, that would be great. And I think it was your idea to actually have me do the magic.
Yeah, you were going to do the magic, and then we were going to have, because that was the year the Spirit cast mm-hmm. was coming in as well. We had Frank Miller oh. and Samuel L. Jackson was there.
Is that the same year?
It was. Yeah, it was, because I had to teach all those guys magic tricks.
Oh, that's right. You taught Sergio.
I taught Sergio the mm-hmm. how to pluck lights out of the air.
Right. Yeah.
And everybody was great. Mm-hmm. Everybody was great. Except Paul Dini.
Except your
illusion.
Bum husband who broke your Blammo box. Oh,
but
God.
That's okay.
So yeah, the Blammo box.
Yeah, enough of that. Oh, the Blammo box. Yeah. Bill Morrison discovers that he's claustrophobic.
That's right.
What happened, Bill?
Well, Misty said, you know, I
we alluded to this in episode
we
2.
We did. Mm-hmm. And I had asked Misty if she had a trick that we could do to bring me out on stage. Mm-hmm. And so a few ideas were thrown around, and then she said, you know, I have this Blammo box, which is a box that, you know, is opened by the magician and shown that there's nothing inside, and then it's closed up, and then there's like a big...
You lift the lid, the sides fall down.
The sides fall down, and you're standing
there. Huge that couldn't have possibly fit into that tiny box. Uh-huh. And you were going to be that huge thing.
I was going to be that huge thing, and she said, why don't you come over and we'll rehearse it?
Uh-huh.
So I came over, Misty put me in the box, and closed the lid, and this box was really made for you.
It was right. made for someone much smaller
someone
than
your
me,
size.
Actually. I'm almost too tall, yeah.
And I barely fit in the box.
Well, you have man shoulders, though. Yeah. I mean, like, you have very broad shoulders.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So I was already cramped. And then Misty pushed the lid down and latched it.
And because magic isn't real, you guys. Go ahead. Just tell them all how it works. It's fine, go ahead.
Well, I'm trying not to.
No, they don't know. They don't know, anyway. He was hiding in a box.
I was hiding in a box.
Uh-huh.
And as soon as the lid came down and I heard it latch, I panicked.
Uh-huh.
And that's the first time I've ever felt that way. And I screamed for Misty to please open the box.
And I did.
And I said, wow, I guess I'm claustrophobic.
Well, I think who wouldn't be? You know, I mean, all of a sudden you're a sardine. You know, because you're pretty tightly wound and you got your legs up over your head. And I mean, it's pretty tough. It's
and I think tight. I could have managed to stay in there for a few seconds.
Yeah, but not as
But when
long
we talked about how long I would have to be in there mm-hmm. prior to the box being brought out on stage,
mm-hmm.
We decided it would not be a good thing for me to do that.
To vomit in my box.
Yeah.
Yes. So instead, Paul broke it.
Yeah.
Hilarious story.
Although we were able to get it quickly patched together enough so that you were able to do the illusion.
Yes. We found black tape.
We found black tape.
And then $800 later, it was fixed.
But Misty taught me how to do the magic drawing board mm-hmm. trick, and I did that. And mm-hmm. Is there another trick that I did? Seems like there was at least one.
Yeah, there was a lot of magic in that show.
Yeah,
I don't remember what it was so long ago. But you did a beautiful job. All right, so we did a lot of magic in that show. All right, next question. Are you ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
You're taking drum lessons?
I am.
How long?
I think I've been taking for about a year now.
From who?
From a talented drummer named Todd Tatum at mm-hmm. the Santa Monica Music Center.
And when are you doing a recital for all of us?
I don't know. You know, I've actually been thinking lately that I really enjoy playing with other musicians, and I have the opportunity actually at my synagogue.
Nice.
So I play on Saturday mornings. My wife and I attend a Messianic synagogue, and I'm now the drummer. And you know, this is something that I never thought I would do or be able to do. I'm sorry that I waited, you know, this late in life to do it, but I love it. And I don't really like practicing, you know, like by myself.
Who does? Yeah.
But I love playing with other musicians. And so I'm looking to put together a garage band.
Okay.
So once I do that, then we'll talk about a recital. Because nobody wants to hear me.
And so should they send their samples to Nathan Kane at Bongo?
Yes.
What about a Drumming Eisner Awards this year? You could just hit the skins throughout the whole thing. It'd be like movie trailers. The old General Cinema.
Everybody gets a rim shot.
And then you can just rim shot people off if they talk too much.
I like it.
Okay. Lady Robotica. And Jane.
Lady Robotica is a comic book that I created with Jane Weedlin from the Go-Go's.
Mm-hmm.
And from Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, and from Star Trek IV, and from Clue.
And from her appearance at the Eisners with the Stormtroopers.
Jane is everywhere.
Yes, she is. And she's a talented lady.
Yes, mm-hmm.
She's so very talented. Is Lady Robotica and where can they find it?
So Lady Robotica is a comic book that we're still working on. We did 2 issues with Image Comics. And we discovered that there's no way for us to do a monthly comic, which is what Image wanted.
Okay.
You know, for me to write it, co-write it with Jane. And by the way, she really does co-write it. She's not one of these celebrities who
ghost,
just puts
ghost.
Her name on it.
Right.
She's really a very talented writer and really funny, too. But it's a science fiction story. It's humor and adventure. It's, you know, there's a lot of rock and roll in there. There's a lot of pop culture. But she's, where am I going? Oh, what was I saying?
Who's Lady Robotica?
Now there was something else I was saying.
About Jane and her and what she does with the book?
Oh, but Jane and I met at a comic convention.
Uh-huh.
Because she was, you know, brought to this convention to do autographs in the celebrity autograph area. And they were giving her a panel so that she could talk about her career.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of, you know, since it's just one person, they wanted somebody to moderate and like ask her the questions. So they asked me if I would be the moderator. And so I'd not met Jane at that point, and I was introduced, and I did a little research online because, I mean, I was a Go-Go's fan, but I really didn't know a lot about what happened after the Go-Go's. So I had my list of questions, and, you know, we just, we did this 2 days in a row, Saturday and Sunday, did 2 panels, and we just really hit it off. We found out we have a lot in common, a lot of our childhood growing up was the same. And we like a lot of the same things. So by the end of the convention, there was this idea that came from somebody else for us to work together and do a comic book. So we talked about it. I mean, I went to Jane and I said, you know, how do you feel? Would you, is this something you would want to do? And she said, oh my God, it'd be a dream come true. You know, I love science fiction. She's a huge Star Trek fan, huge Star Wars fan, Battlestar Galactica. She loves all that stuff.
Nerd.
Yeah, uber nerd. And so she said, I would love to do a comic book. So we decided that the comic book, you know, after getting home from the convention, we emailed back and forth a lot and decided that the comic book would be about her.
Okay.
That it wouldn't just be, you know, something that she created, but she would actually be in it because that would be the most interesting thing for her fans.
Okay.
And we decided to make her a cyborg space hero.
Of course you did.
So she gets abducted by aliens and experimented on and implanted with nanobots, and she starts becoming a cyborg and ends up using her power to liberate this entire planet of cyborg slaves.
Nice. And that's Lady Robotica. Yeah. Spell it for them so they can find it.
LadyRobotika.
Yeah, and it's published
Robotica
by
with a K. Well, as I was saying, it was published by Image, the first 2 issues. We realized that it's really expensive if you have to start hiring people to do a monthly book.
Mm-hmm.
So the first 2 issues, I did some of the art in the first issue. The second issue, we to make the deadline, we had to hire a penciler and an inker.
Uh-huh.
On top of hiring a colorer and a colorist and a letterer.
Wow.
And it put us really in debt. So I've spent the last year just kind of crawling out of this hole of debt. And now I'm working on the third issue.
Okay.
But we're not going to publish with Image any longer. We love Image, but it just wasn't. It's just not going to work for us. In order for me to be able to draw it, I just can't work that fast and also work at Bongo and do all the other stuff I'm doing. So we're going to get through the initial story arc digitally online.
Uh-huh.
And then we're going to collect all the first, I think it's going to be 5 or 6 issues in an actual printed trade paperback.
Oh, wow.
So for the bulk of the story, of the initial story, the only printed version will be the paperback. It won't come out with a 32-page comic other than the first 2 issues.
Mm-hmm.
How do they get a hold of it?
Well, you can go to LadyRobotica.com.
Okay.
Or go to JaneWeedland.com, and there's a link over to the Lady Robotica site.
Can you spell Jane's last name for me?
Weedland is WIEDLIN.
Okay, so Jane, JANE.
Yes.
WIEDLIN.com.
Correct.
Or Lady Robotica, LadyRobotica.com.
Correct.
Okay. All right?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's Lady Robotica. Just to corroborate Paul's story very quickly, don't tell the story because I think he's already told it on here, but who showed up at his bachelor party that was a surprise?
Carrie Fisher.
Mm-hmm.
And Mark Hamill was there. He was already an invited guest.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
But Carrie Fisher showed up, and I think we also had Tracy Ullman. And Beverly D'Angelo.
Oh, wow.
And they stripped. Kind of. They came in and did a little exotic dance for you.
They did a little mock striptease, yeah.
They followed the Lucha Vavoom girls in, and I'm going like, okay, there have been girls dressed as cowgirls and other things. Now this one is a secretary or a mom or something. Oh, my God, it's Carrie Fisher. Oh, no.
Sorry, I have to tell how this happened.
Okay.
So I planned Paul's bachelor party, which was at Trader Vic's.
Yes. Which is Paul's favorite restaurant.
Naughty boy.
And we had a room full of rowdy guys.
Yeah. Flint Dilly and other
you guys.
And other criminals.
Uh-huh.
Mark Evanier was there, as I recall.
Oh, yes.
Sergio Aragonés.
Sergio was there. Mark Hamill, as I mentioned.
Tyler Mayne.
Uh-huh.
And I hired these vintage strippers. So they weren't...
they weren't old ladies. They were...
They have a vintage... They go in for a awesome vintage look.
Yeah, they're like burlesque.
Well, I had to waste a few minutes with my bus all here. And my teeth
fell out. My bra comes off and my teeth come out. And that's when the business begins.
Keep your hands to yourself, cowboy.
All right.
No, not that kind of stripper. They were strippers in the burlesque tradition.
Yeah.
Yes.
So they were like what you would have seen in the 1940s.
Yes.
In a burlesque.
Complete with
house.
The makeup and everything. They were gorgeous, yeah, guys. Yeah.
So they were...
And he got all of Paul's favorites. He hit all the favorites. He got the vintage witch. He got the vintage cowgirl. He did it right, guys. He did it right. All right. So anyway, go ahead.
You'll notice that I have stopped talking.
We
you had fun, though.
We gave
it's
Paul,
been long enough. You're allowed to have fun.
We gave Paul a fez.
Uh-huh.
I think it was a leopard skin
which he
fez.
Still has.
Which I still have, yes.
He still has it.
Yeah. That was his crown as the king of the proceedings.
Yes.
And so anyway, the girls were getting ready in the ladies' room of Trader Vic's.
Mm-hmm.
And they were taking a really long time. So we've gotten through dinner and, you know, it's time for the entertainment. People are looking at their watches, like, what's going to happen? So I go out and I'm, you know, there are no girls waiting outside. I figure they're in the ladies' room. So I'm kind of like hovering around the ladies' room, which is creepy because, you know.
I was going to say like a creeper.
Guy, yeah.
Guy just like hanging around.
So
creeper, by the way, is a word I took from Trish Alasky, who hasn't been mentioned in the past 2 podcasts, so there we go.
Scott
adds it for no reason. There okay, there we go. Still.
So one of the girls came out and I said, oh, hey, you know, what's going on? Are you guys ready? And they said, oh, yeah, sorry. You know, we've been having pretty much a party in the ladies' room because Carrie Fisher was in another room of the restaurant.
It was Tracy Ullman's birthday.
Yeah, and Richard Dreyfuss was in there and Sean Lennon.
In the bathroom?
No, in the private room.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I didn't see Richard.
I was
going to
say that's a vintage stripper.
But yeah. let's see. Sean Lennon was there.
Wow.
He was actually in the ladies' room.
Okay.
Uh-huh. The A party is down the hall.
Yeah. Tracy Ullman, Beverly D'Angelo.
Yeah.
Anyway, Carrie Fisher had apparently come into the ladies' room and saw these girls getting ready and was like, "Oh wow, you know, you look fantastic. What are you here for? What's going on?" And the girls told her, "You know, we're here for a bachelor party that's in one of these private rooms." So when the girls finally came out, Carrie Fisher and Beverly D'Angelo and Tracy Ullman come out with them. And so I started...
Carrie had run into Mark in the hallway.
Oh, had she?
It's like, "Hey, what are you doing here?" "Oh, a friend's bachelor party is in there." He goes, "Yeah, I can hear them. What are they, a bunch of pigs or something?" "No, it's a friend of mine." And he goes, "Oh, really?"
Okay, so anyway, go ahead, Bill.
Well, these ladies were obviously enamored of the strippers, mm-hmm. you know, because they like didn't want to go back to their own party. They wanted to kind of hang out.
Right.
And so they, you know, they saw that I was like the guy in charge. So Carrie Fisher came over to me and she said, "Would you mind if we go in?" And because we want to see them do their act.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I said, this is the weirdest thing. I said, talk about surreal moments. I'm talking to Carrie Fisher and I said,
whom you've never met before.
Who I've never met before. And I said, "Yeah, no problem. However, you should know that Mark Hamill's in there."
"Oh, okay. All right.
And there's a room full of guys who probably have cameras."
Mm-hmm.
"So, just so you know."
"All right. Okay." I was under the impression they met first, but no.
It's okay.
No, and Mark was unaware that Carrie was about to come in.
Okay.
Okay.
So the strippers come in, and they all come in kind of together as a group. And then Carrie is like right on their heels with the other two ladies, I think. Mm-hmm. I don't remember if Tracy Ullman.
I think Carrie actually came up and did the dance. The others were there.
Yeah, I think they kind of hung back. But yeah, she came up and was like dancing with the strippers. And then she came over to Mark and gave him a kiss. And I think he was like, "What the hell is going on here?"
And where's Harrison Ford?
Yeah.
That was my next question.
Right,
I was
right,
like,
right.
Ah. Once I realized it was Carrie and she was doing this dance, I had a big, like, gorilla. We have the tiki head, you know, the drink that you kept refreshing.
Yeah.
And I drank it quickly. And then the Slave Leia outfit sort of faded over Carrie as she was dancing from Return of the Jedi. I said, "Oh, there we go."
Chewie was already there. You're right.
Now it's in context.
Well, actually, it was Rashi, but he was howling.
Rashi
like Chewie.
Was also there.
Rashi was there.
As
Super
was
Eagle
Hobby,
was there.
Grigio Mark's watch. And
yeah.
You guys had a good time. So that's fun. Was there anything else you wanted to say?
No,
about
then
that?
Carrie went out and, you know, went back to her party. And Paul was able to say that he had Princess Leia and Luke Skywalker at his bachelor party.
And I had my cell phone called Arlene Sorkin and I said, "You'll never guess who was dancing for me at my bachelor party. It's Carrie Fisher."
And she goes, "Of course."
Of course. She just started laughing. And
well, what would have been funny is if you said, "You'd never guess who danced for me at my bachelor party." And she said, "Carrie Fisher."
Yeah, right.
That would have been funny. If she
dances at everyone's bachelor party.
Totally.
Yeah.
I was the bride and she danced at my bachelor party. So. Okay, Bill. I think it's time.
Time for the story?
Time for the big story.
How much time do we have?
You know what? We got to go. No, yeah, I'm kidding. Right. I'm
all
kidding.
Right, all right, okay. This is a victory lap. The Little Mermaid penis story.
Here it is, ladies and gentlemen. Woo! Urban legend. It's real and true.
I don't
and
have
this
any
is
voice
the guy.
Left.
Yeah.
Okay. So many of you may have heard of the urban legend, as it's often referred to, of the Little Mermaid, the penis in the palace story.
Explain what that is.
Okay, they're
a
in
penis
the...
is when two people love each other.
I know what a penis is. Thank you.
He learned at his bachelor party.
Yes, I did. I did learn that at the bachelor party. Flint Dilly explain it. Paul, you know, that's what, you know, like the flush syringe, the hot pork sword, you know.
I love when Flint Dilly talks about a project being over and he goes, so we all just hit the handle.
Yeah.
It's just like they flushed it. It's so funny. So he's so colorful. Anyway. All right. So there's a penis in your palace.
Okay. So this.
And it's fishy.
The Little Mermaid.
Oh, the vessel
and the The Little Mermaid. Video cassette was released in, I believe, 1989.
Okay.
When it was released, the story broke about a hidden image in the artwork on the cover of the video cassette package. Yeah. Apparently, a woman in Arizona, housewife,
who had nothing better to do,
and where there are no penises, we believe,
that we know of.
That we know of.
Her husband brought the video home the day it was released from the supermarket. He rented it from the supermarket. And
not from the back room of the video store in the supermarket.
No,
from the
right out front. Right out in front of the check stands.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he kind of nudged his wife, as the story goes, and he said, honey, check out the castle. Look at some degenerate artist put in this artwork. And she looked at it, and she saw that one of the towers in the castle looked very much like a penis. So instead of laughing, which was what I think her husband expected, she went ballistic. And she went to the supermarket, and she demanded that they take this filthy product off the shelves.
So the man pointed out a penis in a cartoon, and his wife went nuts. I think there are deeper issues here with this marriage than...
Yeah.
Our sympathies are with that guy. So anyway, go ahead.
Well, the store manager refused to take the videos off the shelves. However, he did put them all in brown paper bags. And wrote, I'm not kidding.
That's almost worse.
He wrote Little Mermaid. And the reason I know this is because I saw this on the news. I saw the news report where they actually panned across and they showed the videos on the shelves, all with Little Mermaid written in marker on these brown paper bags.
That's hysterical.
Yeah. So to back up a little bit, I worked in a studio in Glendale, and I, at the time, was doing almost all of the movie posters for Disney.
Mm-hmm.
So every new film that came out, new animated film, excuse me, and every re-release, I would do a poster for it. So I did the first poster for The Little Mermaid, and that poster came out. There was never any controversy around that. But when it was time for the release of the video cassette, my studio was not doing the artwork for the video cassettes. That was like a different division of Disney, and they had a different art studio.
Yeah.
However, this art director showed up at our studio one day, and he had this artwork, which was this underwater scene with Ariel and these musicians playing instruments. It was all, you know, from the film. And it's actually what ended up on the back of the video cassette. But this was originally intended to be the cover.
Mm-hmm.
And he explained to us that one of his bosses really loved the poster. And he said, find out who the artist was who did the poster and have them do something similar for the cover. And then you can put this on the back. So my boss took me aside after meeting with this art director, and he said, do you think you could work all weekend? Because they need to go to press on Monday.
Oh, my gosh.
So
So you've got 2 days to make a painting for the cover of a VHS.
Yeah, this was like either Thursday or Friday.
Oh, come on.
Because I think we ended up having to get a sketch from the art director, because the layout was a little bit different because of the formatting of the video cassette. They had to move some of the elements around. And they also, for some reason, changed Ariel's pose a little bit.
Okay.
But other than that, it was pretty much the poster. But it had to be completely repainted.
Right.
It's the prince on one side, she's in the center, and then there's sort of the castle in the background.
Castle's in the background, and then like her father is on one side in the sky looking down, and then Ursula, the evil sea witch, is looking down on the other side.
Right. Okay.
And then you got like Flounder popping up out of the water and Sebastian the crab on part of the rock.
Both holding vibrators and
beads.
Oh, Lord.
Flounder's friend Fluffer is next to
him. Okay. I don't know why that was where I drew the line, but anyway. Fluffer. Oh, that's dirty. Anyway, I don't know what that's all about. Whatever.
You're such a prude.
I know. Oh, God, don't we know it.
So anyway, yeah, I had just a couple of days to do it, and I had to pull an all-nighter in there somewhere. But, you know, I finished the artwork and, you know, didn't have really enough time to do as good a job as I'd done on the poster.
Mm-hmm.
But also it was going to be shrunk down a lot smaller and it would tighten up. So it wasn't a big deal to kind of rush through it.
Mm-hmm.
So the video cassette comes out and I get a phone call at the studio from this kid from my youth group at the church where I used to attend. And I was one of the youth workers at the church. And I used to always tell the kids about what I was working on because they loved the fact that I did all this Disney stuff and
sure.
they were interested in it.
Mm-hmm.
And this kid was, you know, kind of timid. And he said, so Bill, didn't you tell us that you did the artwork for the Little Mermaid video? And I said, yeah. And he said, So you're the one that put that thing in there? And I said, what thing? He goes, you know, the thing in the castle, you know, and the artwork, the thing, you know, the castle. And I'm like, Luke, what are you talking about? And he couldn't say it. Like, he was too shy. He couldn't bring himself to say it. So I said, hang on. We have a copy here. I'll go get it. So I bring a copy to the phone. And I'm looking at it. I said, okay, Luke. What am I supposed to be looking at here? And he says, okay, you see the Little Mermaid's head? Yeah. Okay, you see the tower that's like directly behind her head? Okay. Well, what does it look like? And I stared at it for a second and then it just hit me and I just went, I don't know. What do you think it looks like? And he's like, oh, come on. And I said, Luke, where did you just notice this? And he said, no, it's on talk radio. It's on this radio show. They're talking about it. Oh, and I was like, oh, my God. So the next thing I knew, it was, you know, it was like building steam as this urban legend. And it was like in Playboy, there was a little mention of it in the news section. And I saw the news report from Arizona. And
with footage of you standing outside the women's room at Trader Vic. Renowned Los Angeles creeper, Bill Morrison.
I'm making a castle. Can you pose?
Oh, that's the men's room, Ezra.
Oh, yeah.
That was yes. a totally different bachelor party.
So, you know the game Telephone?
Yes. Yeah.
So this became like Telephone.
Uh-huh.
Because every time you would hear this story, it would get more elaborate.
Uh-huh.
So it started out, and I would hear, like, I would go into a comic shop, and I would hear people talking about it. And every time it was, like, repeated either back to me or I overheard someone talking about it, it was, like, bigger. So first it was...
Excuse the pun.
Yeah. So first it was...
the pun is... It's a pun is...
Oh.
Oh. I know. And I said that twice too, like I really wanted you people to hear it. Stuck by that one.
So first the story went that the artist who did the painting,
whomever that might be,
whoever, it was anonymous, nobody knew who it was.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, because, you know, I didn't get to sign the work or anything.
Mm-hmm.
So the story that was going around was that the artist had been fired by Disney.
That's right.
While he was working on the painting.
And that's so, the version I heard.
So that was his screw you, was painting a penis into the image.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
So that was the first version. The second version was they fired him because he had AIDS. No, they fired him. No, they fired him because they found out he was a homosexual.
Oh.
Disney Philadelphia.
Then it was they fired him because he was a homosexual with AIDS. Oh, and then the final version I heard was that he was a Satan worshiper.
Oh, man.
Wow.
And even the first story, I mean, I didn't even work for Disney. I wasn't disgruntled.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I I mean, I love doing these Disney paintings. You know, I wasn't disgruntled at all. Didn't work directly for Disney, so there's no way they could have fired me.
Mm-hmm.
And it really gets down to, I probably painted that. I mean, I spent more time on the figures, like detailing the scales in Ariel's tail and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And when it came to the background, I just kind of phoned it in. I didn't have that much time left to do it. And I probably painted that tower at like 4 a.m. And it just never dawned on me until, you know, I was on the phone with that kid from my church and looked at it, that's what it looked like. But now that I have seen it, now that I've seen the penis.
Had you never seen one before, Bill?
I cannot unsee the penis.
God. That's the title of the last episode. I cannot unsee the penis.
I cannot unsee the penis.
Wow.
I mean, the epilogue to this is
so many things that I'm biting my straw right now because I just can't. I'm just trying to give it.
It's like the arrow. And have you ever looked at the FedEx logo? There's an arrow in there. And yeah. Damon Lindelof pointed this out to me. And he said that once you've seen it, you can never unsee it.
Yeah.
And I said, you're wacky. There's no arrow in there. I know the FedEx back and forth. And then he said, and he pointed to me, it's right there. It's just the way the lettering is. It fools your eyes.
Negative space.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it's like, okay, I can never look at it again without seeing that.
This is a different situation, dear.
I know. There is no penis in FedEx.
It's still kind of an arrow.
It's kind of an arrow.
It's kind of an arrow.
Anyway, the epilogue is my boss went. I, at the time this whole thing broke, I was working on the poster for The Prince and the Pauper.
Okay.
Which is a Mickey Mouse featurette.
It's not porn. They didn't put you on.
No.
Okay.
And I just finished the painting, and my boss took it into the art directors at Disney Feature Film, which is the. Mm-hmm. The people we mainly worked for.
Mm-hmm.
And these two art directors were talking about the Little Mermaid thing. And they didn't know that it came from us.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't know I had painted it. It came from Dave Willardson's studio. So there he walks in to this discussion where they're talking about it. And one of the art directors said to the other, well, I'll tell you, if I find out who did that, I'll make sure he never works for Disney again.
Oh.
And this was a huge part of our business. Like because we did not only the posters for the films, but any, like all the McDonald's Happy Meal boxes and the point of purchase displays.
Yeah.
Wow.
So we were doing a ton of stuff for Disney. And my boss was like, he had this moment where he had to make a decision because he started thinking, you know, I could keep my mouth shut, but then they might find out
mm-hmm.
it came out of my studio and I'll be cut off. I'll never have a chance to defend it.
Right.
Or I could, you know, open my mouth and defend it right now. And mm-hmm. so he decided to do that. And so he stopped them and he said, I want you guys to know that image came out of my studio. And they went, what? No.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, yeah, and also Bill Morrison painted that. And they said, you know Bill, you know he loves Disney. He would not do that intentionally.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, but come on, it's anatomically perfect.
Perfect.
Of course it is. How well do you know Bill?
Yeah.
So Dave said that he had to argue with them for 20 minutes. But he said, by the time I left there, I was convinced that they believe me that it wasn't intentional and the studio kept getting work from Disney even after I left.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a couple of years later to work on The Simpsons, they were still doing Disney stuff, so it never harmed us, but it came close to just shutting the studio down.
Wow. Awkward moment of silence.
Now Disney hires a couple of penis spotters for everything they do.
Yeah.
Or should I say spotted
dicks? I wouldn't doubt it.
Because spotted dicks, very nice.
Or dick spotters.
Well, after that, you know, everything became suspect.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, then people really started looking for it. It's like, oh, Jessica.
Well, there was
Rabbit.
A Lion King story. Did you know about that?
With the dust coming up.
Yeah.
The...
yeah. When Simba flops down, it seems to, I don't know,
I
form the word
stretched.
Sex or something yeah. like that. Or yeah.
It's actually SFX. It's the effects department put that in.
Oh, really?
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I know some Special background effects. People online, no, on Beauty and the Beast put like Burbank, Valencia, Newhall on this, the sign that the old dad looks at before he goes off in the beginning.
One of my teachers did.
In what movie is that?
Beauty and the Beast, when the father,
right.
Belle, is looking at the street signs, and you just see the flash of lightning real quick. You see Newhall, Valencia.
They're inside jokes on all. I mean, in Home on the Range, the bad guy's called Alameda Slim. I mean, the reason
yeah.
is because
which is the street that the Disney.
They're on Alameda. You know, yeah. it's not that he comes from East Oakland. It's no, he comes from.
But I think animators have hidden images in animation since animation begun.
Oh, sure, mm-hmm. sure.
But it's only recently that we've been able to. Stop
because
and
the technology.
Look at individual frames and spot it.
Oh, look at all, you know, in the Red Hot Riding Hood cartoons, you know, the wolf, you know, was always, in the very first one when the wolf, you know, springs to attention when he sees red, that was always taken as a sign of, okay, it's an erect penis, mm-hmm. you know, in the shape of a wolf. And yet audiences mm-hmm. wanted to see that over and over and over again because you went to a movie and you'd see a cartoon, and the cartoons were interchangeable. It was almost impossible to get a feeling for continuing characters because you used to see them so sporadically. But there were reports when they ran that cartoon, the audience just applauded and cheered until they ran it again, you know. And that was fairly heavily censored, except for, you know, like GIs. You know, the GIs got the uncut one. But people saw that and they said, we got to cut this one to ribbons because there's so much suggestive imagery, mm-hmm. you know, with the wolf and the tongue and everything and the, you know, different transformations his body goes through.
Right.
So they were always seeing, and those were intentional gags, you know, when you put in names of characters or caricatures or things
like
that.
Well, you do that in stuff you write. You put people you know in there. You use names.
I use people as kind of the basis for characters, but it gets really obvious. Like one time I had a talk with a Warner Brothers artist, and he said, yeah, we worked on this new short that Chuck Jones did, and we were lucky. We all got in there. And I said, oh, you did that, huh? And he was kind of proud about it, that he was...
Oh, that's not what I meant.
Well...
You don't do that.
No, but... And there is... And that's something I kind of object to because it's always really apparent when the artist draws himself or his buddies into a cartoon because you're looking at a very stylized world and it's like...
And
cartoon
then all of a sudden
person,
there's you and Bruce Timm and
yeah,
Harley Quinn suit. Yeah.
Cartoon person. Wait a minute. It's like...
Who are those
all
guys?
Right. Here's a guy dressed in clothes that went out of style in the 80s with a bad 80s haircut, too realistically rendered. You know, he has cheekbones here. He's got everything stuffed into his front chest pocket. He's got a hat with a very identifiable logo on it. And he doesn't animate really well. He's kind of creaky. And there are other real cartoon people around him. And it's like, okay, that's the animator who drew that scene. He drew mm-hmm. himself in. Oh, and here's one of his buddies, you know?
Right,
it's
exactly.
just like suddenly like real people in a cartoon.
Right, they look strange there. So, Bill, do you want to make a public statement about The Little Mermaid? Or just that yeah, you did it and nuts to y'all.
Well.
Excuse the pun.
I would just say that it's...
It was completely unintentional.
It was completely unintentional. You know, I would just never do that.
No, that's not who you are.
No.
However, that being said...
Slow clap.
But look at the way the palace was designed. It looked kind of like,
it
you know, they all
right
had
in.
Rounded domes and
it
you know,
fit right
spires.
In, and that was
well,
the design they gave you.
Yeah,
it didn't
take a lot of bad painting on my part
right.
to turn
what
they was
had
already
given.
A phallic shape into. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you look at the original movie poster, there's all these little windows. I mean, it took time to put like glitter and sparkle and. It just had none of that. So it's just this kind of, you know, phallic shape, which is what it is in the film.
Well, right. And I mean, it was, you know, even like a mushroom based kind of thing could be misinterpreted. And
sure.
Yes. Yeah, so that's just not who you are.
No.
If it was who you were, we'd be giggling about it. And we are giggling about it because it's ridiculous, but it's just not who you are.
Now, I'm not saying I won't hide images in artwork.
Uh-huh.
Because I have and I will continue to.
Uh-huh. Well, I mean, there's a penis in everything you do.
No.
In the way you sign your name, even.
Hitchcock with his work now.
Okay. No, Hitchcock, excuse the pun again. Here we go. There's so many.
I just wouldn't, I wouldn't do anything that malicious.
Well, and also you're more clever than that.
Yeah.
You're just not that crass.
Yeah. I wouldn't do it. And I didn't do it and I wouldn't do it. And I promise not to do it again.
I could see you doing something more along the lines of a mad fold-in than an overt wiener picture. You know, it's like, oh, hey, here's a part where I can sneak in a peenie. It doesn't even make any sense. It's just not who you are.
Mm-hmm. I did the poster for Oliver and Company. The
uh-huh.
original. Oh, yeah.
And the layout that they sent over, because they always send like a rough pencil layout, it indicated a scene above Times Square with this piano being suspended from a ball and crane.
Mm-hmm.
And Oliver sitting on the piano, and I think some of the characters are hanging off of it, and then there's some characters on a fire escape. But for the background, you're looking down at Times Square, and they indicated all these little billboards and signs. And so I thought, well, I can't just like Greek in. I got to put something in there. So I put in the names of the people who worked in my studio.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the art directors at Disney, I put his name in one of the billboards. And there's a sign along, like vertical sign along this one building. And the sign says Morrison Hotel.
Mm-hmm.
So the piece went to Disney and we got this call from the art director. And he said, well, the lawyers here are going nuts. Because they recognized my name, the art director's name was in there. So he said, they recognized my name and they said, what's that doing in there? So that was like the thing that drew their eye to these other names. And they said, who are all these other people? Well, this is Willardson. He's the guy that owns the studio. Okay, get rid of that. What about this name? Well, we don't know. So they're calling us to find out like who all these names are.
Uh-huh.
And I think all my boss, I don't think he told them about the Morrison Hotel, because that ended up staying in.
Oh!
Because they didn't know who I was. Uh-huh. I was an anonymous artist.
Mm-hmm. It sounds sort of like the Doors reference or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But he said the lawyers were calling somebody in New York, like at a Disney New York office, because this is before the internet. So mm-hmm. they couldn't mm-hmm. just go online and see, you know, do these businesses, is there a Morrison Hotel in mm-hmm. New York?
Right.
So they had somebody look up in the Yellow Pages in the New York office to see if there was a Morrison Hotel, and there wasn't. So they allowed that to stay in.
Nice.
So my name was the only one other than my friend Calvin's dog, Greta. Greta's name got to stay in.
There's
but you know, it's fun. It's fun putting things in art, but I wouldn't do anything nasty.
That's just not who you are. Yeah.
There's a bunch of that stuff in Arkham City, you know. Slipped a bunch of names there. I think my name's in there.
Of course, it always.
That's easier to hide in a giant video game.
It is, but also Paul is usually the one that goes, "Oh man," because he didn't write it in.
Yeah,
you know, like
yeah.
The artists will frequently stick him. Like
I think there's like
a...
the Dini Apartments or something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Well, and then they'll put you know like our dogs' names or something like that, and like we were just alluding to that Batmite episode where you and Bruce Timm are in Joker and the Harley garb in the front row.
Yeah.
Of the
oh well, I didn't add that. That was
no, they did that to you.
Yeah.
And you were like, when we were watching it, he was like, oh, geez. You know? And he's delighted. You know, it's always very funny, but it was just like, guys.
Are you afraid it comes off like you
like
were
he did
self-promoting?
Do it, you know? Yeah, well, yeah, sometimes, yeah.
Well,
it's fun, you know?
Actually, the reason that got in was that scene was in there as written, but I just indicated that everybody else in the audience was a Batmite.
Mm-hmm.
And Bruce Timm was in the recording that day. And we needed one guy to give that meh line. And I said, how about Bruce, you do it? And so he goes, meh. You know, because it was funny coming from him. Uh-huh. And that gave the idea, okay, let's draw Paul and Bruce in. And they made everybody, instead of a Batmite in the audience, They made them just, you know, rank and file Batman fans wearing wearing the masks and everything. It's really funny. But so when that happens, when it's organic, when it's fun.
Okay, so we need to wrap this up.
Yes.
He's finally told the story. Bill, our stories are so not over. We've been friends for so long, and there's so much more I want to ask you.
We have all those holiday stories to tell.
We have so many. Will you come back?
Yes, let's give the fans a break from me, but I will definitely come back.
Do you promise?
In the future. Oh, okay. Of course.
Okay.
Especially if you're offering shawarma.
Always. Exactly. All Avengers get shawarma.
All the Avengers get
shawarma. Except Iron Man, because he dies.
I'm making a reference now to like 3 episodes ago.
Yeah, that's okay. It's still here. The house still stinks of it.
Oh, yeah, we had so much left over. We've been eating cold shawarma for the last 3 weeks.
Right. We just ordered way too much. Mm-hmm. It was Zank Wow Wow chicken. It was too much. Mm. So much. Well, Bill, thank you so much for being with us for staying the month at our house.
Oh, it's always a pleasure. Thank you, Misty.
Oh, we love you so much. Thank you, Paul. Thank you for everything.
Oh,
thanks, Rashi, if you're still around.
Yeah, hey, I heard you got a phone call, pal. I'm
no.
going to write in
for no. Rashi!
You can see Bill Morrison's latest work, Detroit Pop, at the River's Edge Gallery in the Detroit, Michigan area, starting June 15th through July. For more information, visit Facebook Detroit Pop or go to www.artattheedge.com. This has been another episode of Radio Rashi. If you've enjoyed this episode, let everyone know by leaving a review in the iTunes store. It's a great way to help others find us. You can also leave comments on RadioRashi.com, Facebook.com/RadioRashi, or follow us on Twitter at Radio Rashi or @Paul_Dini to leave us questions. Thanks for listening, and tell your friends.